The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Mike's side with Steve Conroy. I am Pat Boyle. And Steve, the hockey season is upon us. Blackhawks will get to business on Thursday in Ottawa. Seeing a lot of Ottawa this preseason and now to start the year. But the big news on Monday was Corey Crawford actually participated in practice with his teammates. And, they joked a little bit. Did they take it easy on him, kind of shooting low and things of that nature? But it was good to see Corey get through it. Still says he's got a ways to go. Q said medically he's cleared and ready to go. They need to get him in game shape. I think they're going to be cautious here, but it seems like it could be middle to late October that we could see him, you know, back in the crease in an actual NHL game.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And it's funny, with head injuries, with concussions, there's no firm timeline. And it's like, you know, you break an ankle, you know you're going to be out 6 weeks and maybe another couple weeks before you can actually get in a game. But with something like a head injury, it's all dependent on how Corey feels. So, I mean, these first few steps are real important. The full practice with the regular team, not just getting shots from your goaltender coach. It'll be interesting to see how he feels. And if he gets the green light and everything's good, they've got 3 games in 4 nights. I'm not too sure if you should rush him into a situation like that. But then after that, you get a few days off, and then all of a sudden you get some home cooking, some home games. Maybe he's ready, like you say, maybe mid-October. So I know the team's excited about it. I think they realize, though, we've waited, 8 months?
9 months, something like
nine
that.
9 months.
Yeah.
Why rush it now? Let's just err on the side of caution, maybe give him an extra week before he actually gets in there. And then the rest is up to Corey, and hopefully there's no other kind of ill effects from what he's gone through, and that he feels 100%.
You can tell this injury's really weighed not only on Corey but on this entire organization. I mean, for Corey to deal with something since last December, to try to make a go of it in February that didn't work out in Arizona, and then to be kind of shut down and even admitting at the start of camp that he had had some symptoms, those players in that dressing room know what he's gone through, and they know that he wasn't around much last year, and they know how important he is to the big picture. And like a guy like Jonathan Toews, who's dealt with concussions, there's the physical hurdle that Corey needs to get over. It's the mental one as well. Like when he gets back, he's probably going to wonder, when he takes a puck to the helmet or gets bumped by a big physical forward, how is he going to respond? And it may just take time in that actually happening before he gets over that hurdle.
Well, you know what, Pat? And when you think about Corey, he's a great goaltender, but he plays the puck maybe more than most goaltenders do. He likes to come out. He's like a third defenseman back there. And when he got injured, remember that game against Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
It was Malkin.
That was in November, a few weeks prior to the December 23rd. But a lot of people point to that as one of maybe the time that it may have occurred.
Yes. That was, it wasn't one defining blow, but that was certainly one of the bigger ones. He got bumped a couple times after that. I think he got into 6 or 7 games after that
game.
Yes,
he did. And he played actually well, maybe, was masking what was going on here and maybe kind of made the situation worse. Want to speculate, but
right.
But yeah, a lot of people point to that hit by Malkin where he's playing the puck outside of the crease and kind of went down and almost like he was shot.
But that's his game. So he cannot be hesitating when it comes to a situation like that, whether the puck's behind the net and he got to come out and stop it, or whether he's going to charge out and try and, find his defenseman as an outlet. He's got to be 100% sure in his brain, in his head, that he's capable of doing that and that he's not going to hesitate and he's not going to be afraid. So that might take a little bit of time. I've I've had concussions before, but I've never had the symptoms, the post-concussive symptoms, like the headaches, like the vomiting, like the aversion to bright lights. And so I can't imagine what he's going through or what he went through. Now, he seems to be, you know, a lot better. Let's call him 100% because he's practicing. Will he play the same type of game where he's coming out and playing pucks? You know, I certainly hope so.
So here's my question to you. With Cam Ward and Anton Forsberg, the fill-ins, and just looking at the guys that have made this the roster to start, some of the forwards have a little more defensive side of their game, you know, like the guys that didn't make it, Sakura and maybe an Edsel. Maybe some of the guys that do you here's my question. Do you think Joel and the Hawks realize they may have to tighten things up defensively as a team until they know for sure what they have in the crease?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of who you see in the lineup right now and who got sent to Rockford. I know the coaching staff last year didn't like the number of chances they were giving up off the rush. Didn't like the number of chances they were giving up off the cycle. And, you know, that speaks to me of, you know, not guys who are fancy and can distribute the puck, but guys who play a heavy game. And, you know, I think that's part of the reason you see a Luke Johnson and a David Kampf and a John Hayden and an Andreas Martinsson, you know, over guys like Sakura and maybe Edsel too. So, you know, I think that's important to look back and listen. This was a long off season for everybody, but especially the coaching staff. They had plenty of time to go over tape, see where things went wrong. And I know from speaking with some of those guys that they just weren't real happy with the chances that they were giving up, whether it was off the rush or off the cycle. They thought they could really be a lot better in that respect. So, yeah, I mean, even if Corey's playing, that'll help an awful lot if teams aren't getting those prime scoring chances.
DeBrincat and Taves will start together. Dominic Cahoon will be the right winger on that line. What did you see from Cahoon in the preseason that makes you feel confident that that'll be a good fit with Taves and DeBrincat?
Well, you know, keep in mind, he's an unknown. He's only 23 years of age. And when I saw him in training camp, it was like he was a seasoned vet. He was, especially in the preseason games, he wanted the puck. He wanted to make a difference. His speed was self-evident. I mean,
yeah,
you could
noticeable.
See it. Very noticeable. But I like the fact that he just wanted to make plays. And, you know, you don't always see that. And, you know, 23 is not real young, but he's never played in the NHL. He's played in Europe his whole career. Played a little bit of junior hockey with the Sudbury Wolves. But here's a guy who wanted to make a difference, wanted to make plays. And I think that's going to fit Johnny really well because Jonathan's the defensive one on that line, and he's going to be responsible in his own zone and making sure that you know he's one of the first guys back. But Cahoon and DeBrincat can go and do their thing. And you know, I mentioned DeBrincat. I was really impressed with his training camp, and you know, a couple of the games I saw him play in, he just really controlled the pace of the play. You know, he's got that. He's got great edges. He's got the great cutback, but he's just very patient and calm with the puck. He never seems rushed with the puck, and I think that's something that's hard to teach, and he's got it as a rookie.
Yeah, he seems like a rink rat too. You know, when you look at, it was a year ago, DeBrincat was basically in Joki Haru's shoes. He was the 19-year-old, 20-year-old trying to make this team who – I remember looking at him at prospects camp and at Johnny's, and none of us were like, wow, this guy's a, you know, a shoe-in to make the team. Then his summer continued. He really turned some heads in Traverse City. And then pretty, and well, obviously, he led the team in scoring last year. He didn't really have a lull. I mean, there might have been a 10-game window where, you know, I asked him specifically, did you hit a rookie wall? And he said, no. I mean, the puck just wasn't going in. But I just like the quiet confidence about him, and it just seems like now watching him come in year two, it's like he's been here for a handful of years because he's just so at ease and he feels confident that he's equipped to play in the NHL.
Yeah, I can remember a couple times last year. Remember when he was kind of, you know, he'd be out there with either Taves or with Kane, and he'd be trying to force him the puck, and it just seems like, you know, now, especially what I saw in preseason, you know, he's got that experience. He's just going to take it himself, and he's going to make the right play, and he's not going to, you know, pass it just because I'm skating down the wing with Jonathan Toews. He's going to make the right play. You hit it on the head. He is a rink rat. He loves hockey. He watches hockey. He plays a ton of hockey himself. But here's a guy. You know, you talk about sophomore slumps. I have no worries whatsoever that he's going to hit that wall or he's going to step back and have a sophomore slump. I could see him leading the team and scoring again this year.
Of the vets who need bounce-back years or looking for bounce-back years, and, of course, Saad would be in that camp, Toews, you could say Anisimov to a degree, Kruger, although it was with another team, and then on the back end, Keith, Seabrook, and others, who do you think is most likely to have the biggest bounce back this year?
Well, you know, all those guys you mentioned, they'd be the first to tell you that they did not have good years last year. But, you know, that all being said, Brandon Saad, what did he have for goals? I can't even remember. Was it 15, 14,
yeah,
15 goals?
Yeah, it was 18, I believe, right? Six in the first six games, 12 the rest
yeah,
of the
year. So he had 18 goals. You know, here's a guy who should put up between 25 and 30 goals a year. And I peg him for 30 this year. I think he will have the biggest bounce back. He was not playing, and we haven't seen him a couple of years because he was playing in Columbus. But even in Columbus, he was getting points. He's got to play the north-south game. He's got to be going to the net hard. It can't be the east-west game. He's got to be north-south. He's got to pay the price in front of the net, and he's got to park himself in the blue paint. He's capable of that. Saw a little bit of that in the last game. I thought he struggled a little bit in training camp at the beginning. And then Joel Quenneville might have too because he dropped him to the third line
right.
in one game. But his last game against the Columbus Blue Jackets, his former team, he was noticeable. And he was doing those things I talked about, you know, going to the tough areas, playing a simpler game. I mean, he's getting a lot of money. You don't have to be fancy. Just, you know, you're a big body. You've got good hands. You're a great skater. Go to the tough areas. Go in a straight line. And you're gonna get your goals.
One of the drills they had him doing today, and this was after practice was over, was they had him facing the net with his back to the shooter, and they were just firing pucks for him to react off of in front of the net, knocking in rebounds. I mean, if you remember those six goals in those first six games, it started with the big night against Pittsburgh. If any of those touched the twine, I'd be surprised. I mean, they were all, like you said, him going to the net. I remember maybe one or two bouncing off a shin pad on a cross-ice pass, but or a skate or what have you. But the puck wasn't being elevated. It was him going hard to the net and knocking in and redirecting passes and shots.
Well, and that's the other thing. You talked about the puck probably never touched the back of the net his first three goals. He was probably no farther than 4 feet away from the blue paint on all of those goals too. So, you know, he knows where his bread and butter is, and that's, you know, that 10-foot area, that circumference right around the crease, and that's where he's got to get a little more frequently. He got away from it last year. Sometimes, you know, when you get traded for a guy, listen, you know, he was reading the newspaper and he saw what Panarin did last year, and he had a fantastic season. You try to maybe keep up with that, you change your game, and it just doesn't fit yet, and it certainly didn't fit Brandon Saad last year.
All right, so let's move to the blue liners. That was obviously a problem last year. It's going to be Keith and Joakim Harju to start as a pairing, Manning and Seabrook, Gustafsson and Ruta, with Brandon Davidson likely the seventh D-man who might be a scratch there for that Thursday night game. As you look at those defensive pairings, you know, do you feel that this group is appreciably better or has the possibility to be better than last year's defense?
Well, you know, that's tough because a couple of guys who are probably slated to start are injured right now, and Connor Murphy and Gustav Forsling. So without those guys, I don't think we're as strong as we could have been. That being said, I love Brandon Manning. I really like what he did in Philly last year. I called a game that they played against us, and he was paired with Gostisbehere, who I know you know, a guy who, you know, was lugging 25, 26, 27 minutes a night and was all offense. So Brandon Manning was the guy who was kind of responsible defensively, and he had a really good year point-wise himself. Davidson, I'll tell you what, of the new defenseman, I thought he was one of the better guys. He might not start the season, but you're going to see him at some point on the back end. And, of course, we know what Root is about. We know what Gustafson's like. If they can be consistent, they'll be fine. I think a big question mark right now is Joki Haru, and he would not be here if Connor Murphy and Gustav Forsling was in the lineup. But he's going to get an opportunity. And as long as there's no glaring mistakes, I know the coaching staff likes what he brings. He can bring some offense. They'd like to see him maybe a little more responsible in his own end as far as, you know, eliminating guys, especially along the boards. But, you know, as far as making that first pass, lugging it out of danger, maybe chipping in every once in a while on the power play, he's got some offense. And, you know, I think the future looks really bright for him. So, you know, keep an eye on him, especially early in the season.
We have our season preview special on NBC Sports Chicago Monday night at 8 o'clock with Steve and myself. And one thing we touch on in that special is the power play. Steve, it has to get better. With this National Hockey League, the difficulties of scoring 5-on-5, with the way they're calling, you know, slashing and hooking, it's paramount to cash in on your power play chances. If you look at the last four teams standing a year ago, they were all top 11. Golden Knights were 11th, but it was, you know, Winnipeg, Washington, and Tampa Bay were all, you know, top 8 power plays, and there were a couple that were in the top 5. That's not coincidence. Those teams are, and it showed even in the playoffs where they would cash in, and reasons why they advanced because of the success of the power play. So it has been a focal point for Kevin Dineen and the Hawks coaching staff. And here's the thing, if they struggle, I mean, don't feel like you got to change personnel because you may, you know, stick with it a little bit, have some consistency and see if a talented group can emerge and be difference makers on that power play.
Well, and that's what a power play is all about. It's about chemistry. And you don't develop chemistry overnight. You've got to practice. You've got to play. And you might come up empty a couple of times. And that's where your second unit hopefully can go out there and pick up the slack. Look, last year they scored 43 power play goals in 82 games. So that's basically one every two games. That's not going to cut it. And I think San Jose maybe led the league, and they had, you know, 78-70. So it's almost a goal per game on the power play. So that's how you win those close games. It's a 3-2 league, and we know that as well as anybody. Every time you look at the scores, you know, 9 times out of 10, it's a 3-2 score. So goals are hard to come by. You've got to be good defensively. But if you can chip in, you know, 2 out of every 3 games with a power play goal, that's huge. That's huge for your confidence. That's huge for, you know, the team. And scoring goals was an issue last year. And that's one area where you can really improve your production is with a good power play.
All right, well, that's going to do it for the latest Hawks Talk podcast. Again, our special on NBC Sports Chicago, Monday night, 8 o'clock. For Steve Conroy, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening to the Hawks Talk podcast brought to you by the Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Thursday night, it starts for real against the Ottawa Senators. We will have Blackhawks pregame live at 6 o'clock on the main channel.